He's a master strategist.
I am telling you how to save the lives of 600 men.
Demolitions expert.
Get onto the diving section. Tell them I want a wetsuit and a berry gun.
And he doesn't need a license to kill.
Except for a slight squelch when entering the flesh. They do not make any noise.
Roger Moore fights against time and terror as folks. Can't stop the makeup.
Welcome to the James Bond Complex. My name's Matt.
I'm Edgar.
We are a James Bond podcast that usually covers the entire James Bond phenomenon from filming to film and everything in between. Today, we're going really in between, but we're still a little bit like James Bond because we have...
You might want to say today we want to do a little bit more.
A little bit more. A little bit Roger Moore.
We always like more Roger.
Yeah, so we're taking a detour in Roger's canon of movies, his filmography.
His oeuvre.
A movie that has been on my queue for quite a few, I don't know if it's years or months. It's been on Netflix Canada for a while. A movie that has so many names. It's called North Sea Hijack. It's also called Folks. It's also called Assault Force. And even in French, I've seen it called Les Loups de Mer or something like that.
Wouldn't that be the sea wolves?
No, no. It's
This is called Les Loups de Mer in French?
Let me get the real title for the French version. There's so many.
How can you mess that up?
That's my mother tongue. But
not you, but I'm talking about the people
Les Loups
that
de Haute Mer. Sorry, the Haute Mer.
There you go.
You know, I there's so many ways to call this movie. I suggest we give it our own name, and I suggest we call it A Very British Die Hard.
You know, there's something to that. I'll give you that much. There's something to that. You know, you maybe swap some of the roles, you know, insofar as you have a hero infiltrating in as opposed to infiltrating out, but there's something to it. Terrorists, close space, American versus European. You know, there's definitely there's meat that can be chewed on that title. I can appreciate that. I'm a little bit surprised, Matthew, though, that you were able to conjure that up, seeing as you didn't watch the movie. How did you come
up with that? Yeah, I think I only saw the trailer and maybe some clips on YouTube. And I looked at Roger Moore's luscious, real, super real, realistic beard.
Of course, so did I. His beautiful beard. What's... any other comment about the beer?
Did Roger Moore shave certain parts of his body and glue it on his chin?
Because that looks like chest hair. I don't think he had much chest hair.
Not chest hair.
Front arm chair.
More, you know, I have an itch.
Lower?
Down there. Do you mind? I think that's what he did.
Getting a little hairy down there. Would you mind?
Because that
not enough. Too much hair down there. Not enough up here. I have an idea.
That beard looked like a tumor. It's going all over the place. It's disgusting.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to a few disgusting things about this movie. But let's first find out what it's about.
Yes. Tell me.
When governments and insurance companies are at a standstill in the face of terrible odds, they call upon one man, albeit reluctantly, Rufus Excalibur Folks, paramilitary trainer and operative extraordinaire. He is the man who can solve any situation, no matter how dire. Brave, bold, adventurous, he trains his crack assault unit at a remote castle ground where he also caretakes an ungodly number of meow cats. In fact, the film opens with the historic insurance collective Lloyd's of London inviting folks to discuss the Pontiac...
Fucks?
He don't give a folks. to discuss the potentiality of a terrorist attack on an oil drilling platform in the North Sea, like some sort of a North Sea hijack, you might call it.
Oh.
Lo and behold, shortly thereafter, psycho headcase Lou Kramer, if that is his real name, and his merry band of mercenaries aggressively commandeer the ship Esther on her way to the oil platform Jennifer. This leaves the British government, led by
a woman,
scrambling to thwart Kramer's plans to blow up Esther, Jennifer, and vessel Ruth if his band is not handsomely paid. Far be it for the crew of the Esther to not at least try fighting back against Kramer via cloak and dagger mini operations devised by several of its members, like the resourceful Boy Girl. However, their attempts are in vain. A coordinated effort timed to perfection by Jennifer's leading mate, Admiral Francis Brinson, and of course, folks, is the only possible solution to give the oily Kramer the slip. After a series of back-and-forth contentious telephone conversations between the vessels, folks and his men get the upper hand in a daring assault on the Esther, with girl boy, pulling through in the end to lend a helping hand. With the terrorists' plans foiled, the Prime Minister herself gives thanks to folks with a milk saucer to feed all that pussy. And thus ends folks.
There's a few good ones. Honestly, somebody would listen to that plot description and then just the girl, boy, girl, they'd probably be super confused.
So is folks.
That feels wonderful.
Hey, turn around.
I thought you are a girl. Even so, a lot of people owe you a great deal. And so do I.
You got no fucks to give.
No. not for healthily breasted people, anyways.
Perky.
He serves his Rogers for other folks. For other folks. Hey, we can just... No, why talk about the movie? We can just keep doing this.
Yeah, then truth be told, I mean, this is the second time recording this discussion.
We're cutting this one fast and loose.
Little
technical miscommunication, which led to a kind of an embarrassing mistake. Yeah. I think we're split the fault pretty much 50-50.
Oh, no,
I
fully agree. Like,
I said something which sounded clear. You said something which sounded clear. So I did something that, then you did something, and we were like, hey, where's
did
the
I
folks
do, did I just do what I think I did? Tell Oops. Me I did. No, you did. Oops.
So we'll make this, speaking of quickies...
No, it's going to be a quick...
This might not last an hour and a half.
No, it's not going to be an hour and a half. So you had seen this movie before? I hadn't.
I had done a little mini marathon in the weeks and months following Sir Roger's passing in May of 2017, and this was one of the films that I had watched, yes.
Do you watch anything more modern?
Like non-70s, 80s, stuff
like
that?
Yeah, something post View to a Kill. He still made movies, not many, but he still was still active until...
Well, I've never seen Spice Girls, or Spice World, excuse me. I wanted to see The Quest, but I never saw it.
Yeah, that's the one I'm really curious about, the one with Van Damme.
Yeah, where he plays like the bad guy, sort of like the Shang Tsung of the... A non-combatant Shang Tsung.
Like sort of the organizer of a tournament.
Yeah,
I've been curious about that one.
I'm always down for some Roger Detours, so.
And that's also, I mean, that's Van Damme. Van Damme, you
in
can
his prime.
You can in his prime, and you can segue into his rivalité with Seagull, and Seagull broke Sean Connery's wrist. There we go.
6 degrees of separation. You did it in three.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
I win.
You win. You're good at this game. But no, to answer your question, at the very least, I can't think of anything post 1990.
No, but it's weird because after A View to a Kill, he was still active, but he was never a feature star. He was never as big as he was when he was Bond.
Got it. Not a star, cameo, last 60 seconds. He is a, quote, villain in the aborted reboot of The Saint. One of the bad guys has like a teleconference with one of the head honchos of the organization.
Oh, really?
It's Roger Moore.
Ooh.
Yeah.
We're like, apparently they're redoing another Saint movie
again. They tried it. It didn't work.
They did a TV movie a couple years ago.
For free on Netflix.
And it was not very, like, I couldn't finish it. I
did because I'm a Saint fan.
I was bored.
It has nothing to do with the Saint. Just like the Val Kilmer movie had nothing to do with the Saint.
Well, it's based on the literary character. But you know who else is based on the literary character? Folks, it's Rude. What's the name of the book? It's on the wiki page.
Rude would be a good title if
it's Esther, Ruth, and Jennifer.
That's a good name.
Written by Jack Davies, who also adapted his own work.
I do. You know what? Now that you've revealed what the title of the book is, I like how the movie ends even a little bit more because
it's cute.
Yeah, it's cute. The three cats there with the. Actually, I got the plot synopsis wrong. It was not a saucer. It was kittens. Oops. Now that I think of it, but yeah, the kittens are named Ruth, Esther, and Jennifer. I do like that.
No, it's cute.
Speaking of not Rufus, but rather rudeness, how about this folks guy?
Oh my God. Oh my God. That got, you know, in the original recording, I'm going to try and not refer to the original recording, but I had the one thing, because, I mean, to be told, I started watching that movie the Monday after Operation Snowfall. I was tired. I fell asleep. And to keep myself entertained, I came up, but I tried to analyze the movie to make me, to make it more interesting. And I came up with the theory that, the character of Folks, who was previously married, no longer married, and has what would you call this appreciation of womankind is?
Well, he barely recognizes women when he sees them, for starters, so.
You really don't like women, do you?
I do not. You see, I, together with my five elder sisters, was raised by a maiden aunt. Both my parents died tragically in childbirth. Until the age of 10, I was forced to wear my sister's hand-me-downs. Then, when I married, I discovered to my horror that my wife also had five sisters, all unmarried, and all expecting my support. I find cats a far superior breed.
Well, in Moonraker, you know, good afternoon, I'm looking for Dr. Goodhead. You know, my name's Bond, James Bond. You know, you just found her, a woman. He's almost like, yeah, it's kind of condescending, but he's almost like, oh, this is interesting. In Folks, it's more like,
I hate you.
I didn't know they let women in here.
Ugh.
Ugh. Blech.
Like, you know what? Like a 12-year-old. No, not even 12. Like a 10-year-old.
10-year-old, yeah.
9, 10-year-old.
Girl cooties.
You know, my brother, like I told you, like his girlfriend has kids. One of them is about that age. Not that age that you like girl, you're not too soon. Just before that. Just before when you treat, you're like, you're not fascinated. You're just like, ugh.
That the last hoorah of the those that last year where you find girls really gross.
Yes, yes.
It's even more. There's more vim and verve to that hatred. Then you sort of go like
the testosterone is about to kick in, and he's not aware of that. And when he starts, his older brother, his testosterone has started seeping in. But this one is and that's who Roger Moore reminds me of a little bit, like a child, but also there's moments where he could be seen as maybe more interested in. Well, he has a bunch of
sweaty men with him.
Sweaty men. You could call these men seamen under him. But
wouldn't you agree?
I think I came up with that theory when at the end there's the character that you called girl boy. There's a girl that she's dressed in men's clothing, and Roger Moore's character, Folks, finds her hiding in rowboat, safety boats. What do you call them?
Yeah,
escape boat, skateboards. Whatever. He finds her
lifeboat.
Lifeboat. Yeah. Thank you. And he uses her to sort of keep one of the henchmen at bay. She aims a gun, and if, like, after he saved everyone, Roger Moore comes back to her, and she's like freezing her, her boobs off. And Roger Moore says, "Oh," she's sort of complaining. Roger Moore says, "Oh, I'm gonna take care of you." He carries her, the little boy, and he always calls her a boy, and she's trying to say, "No, I'm a girl." And Roger Moore's like, "Oh, no, no, you're dressed in men's clothing." And at one point, she gives up. "Okay, I'm a okay, I'm a boy."
If it'll make you happy.
It's just funny.
It's bizarre.
It's really bizarre, but it's funny. And he takes her in the shower, and he's really interested in Boyger when he thinks...
This folks guy really wants to get this little girl boy naked.
Yeah, and in the shower, and when he's starting to warm her up, and he's rubbing her, and he turns her around, and he notices that a boy girl has boobs and is clearly a woman. He's like,
The camera doesn't need to pan down.
Yeah, she's sort of... rap, rap, rap. He's no longer interested.
No, I'm out of here.
So I'm like, okay, I'm going to leave you alone. So that made me laugh a little bit.
I know. Well, obviously, you know, we revealed that this is the second time we're recording this episode. So I'm well aware that you're not a fan of this of this film. I like it more than you.
Yes, you do.
To be honest, do I love it? No. Was I bored stiff watching it? Neither. We'll get to Anthony Perkins, who is American. Even though the director is British-born American, I do find there's a bit of a 70s, 80s, like Britishness, British filmmakingness about the film.
It was made in England also.
Right. That helps. But I feel it's very vintagey in that way. It's like, yes, there's a bit of stiffness to the proceedings here.
It's a bit...
There's a lack of dynamics.
It's a little bit archaic, yeah. I would say. It feels really dusty. It feels like it came out 8 years before Die Hard, and you compare the two movies, and one looks like a dinosaur, and the other one's super flashy and modern, and still like watchable 30 years later. This thing is 40. It's turning 40 this year, and I wouldn't recommend it to a Bond fan. Maybe two clips on YouTube for a Roger Moore aficionado, but to most people, this is the type of movie that could easily be remade, because it's not that good, but there's an interesting storyline there, and then in a cool character. Like I made fun of the character of Folks, yeah. But there's something so
there's definitely material, let's say, to be mined there.
It's such of it's debatable comedic, quality. It's comedic. All misogynistic he is. It's just
the guy won't shut up about it.
It's bizarre. Like, I don't know if people would laugh at it today. I think the people would take it too seriously.
In today's culture.
Oh no, you can remake that movie.
They would not. Well, they could remake it and make Rufus Excalibur Folks like a mean piece of work and a bit of a trashy character, but I don't think, unless you made it fully independently financed, in which case good luck with your marketing and this and that, but I don't think there's a studio that's going to fully back. You'd have to tone this
down.
It's
not something they'll bring back, you know what, because you can't print a t-shirt. You can't put that on launch boxes.
No.
It's an IP that's going to be reinvigorated for the 21st century. Nobody cares about Folks except you and me. And we even, like, only half of us cares a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think we've been elaborating a little bit about what we find pretty silly or bad or antiquated and dusty. I like that term you use. You know, what's dusty about the movie? Why do I like it more than you? I think the cast is really great. I like Anthony Perkins.
I would agree with you that the cast is superb.
You got Anthony Perkins.
Shame he passed away so young. He's really good in this movie.
He's very good. You definitely get a sense of the fact that this is a dangerous man that's really pushing things to the edge.
Yeah.
He'd get along well with Timothy Dalton. Living life on the edge.
Anyway, he could have been... Man, had he lived longer, he could have been like the sort of older version of the... Alan Rickman sort of played the ultimate 80s, early 90s bad guy. Like it was at one point, might have been or attached to the role of Trevelyan for GoldenEye.
And Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
It would have been great. But to me, it's not the chef of Nottingham and Hans Gruber from Die Hard. And I got a lot of audience Gruber, just the way he comments everyone's looking at him, and just he's always making the threats. He's always saying that, and he has a good repartee with Moore when they first meet. I loved all of their interaction.
Brief though they are, their interactions, they're memorable moments. And what's interesting about that encounter, the first one anyways, when the Admiral, played by James Mason for that matter, and folks, they're part of the plan is that they will offer themselves as more kidnappees to sort of put the Lou Kramer character in a false sense of security. Anyways, so they land on the oil rig during a storm. And the James Mason character gets in. And both of these, the protagonist folks and the antagonist, Lou Kramer, have been built up. They're both very smart. Mm-hmm. And folks, you know, is ready for anything. And what I like about that moment is that the Lou Kramer character instantly knows, I don't like you folks. You're trouble. Get off here. So it forces folks to rethink the strategy, which I guess is like... Folks does not encounter too many great challenges in the movie, but that's one of them. So at least there was that in that movie. And it also heightened how intelligent and how perceptive the Lou Kramer character is.
Yeah.
So it did make them good rivals, even though they don't share much screen time.
They have the cast is... solid. You know, James Mason is not an actor I'm very familiar with. I know him only from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. You're more familiar with his work, but he looks decrepit in that movie.
Looks old, yeah.
It's one of the last movies he did before passing away.
This is Mary. I like cats. I don't like people who don't.
Well, now, to complete the operation we've just seen, what happens when your men reach the wheelhouse?
It's a matter of timing. My men, while you create a diversion, will surround the wheelhouse. Harris will toss in the stun grenades, and at the same moment, I shall kill the man nearest the remote control switch.
I go aboard, Esther.
We both do. You in your official capacity, and I as your flag lieutenant.
And what makes you think that they'll allow us aboard?
We shall offer ourselves as additional hostages when they begin to get nervous. And I shall see that they do get nervous. Cheers.
It's funny because I have seen his earlier work. I've even seen some of his film noir work from the late 40s. I want to say this is the only... latter day, James Mason role I've seen. I don't think I've seen any latter day James Mason roles other than this one. So even though I had seen the film, I had forgotten, just how old he looks in this. But then again, most of what I've seen is from like literally 20 years plus earlier. So there's this 2-decade span where I just haven't seen anything where James Mason is in it. So.
Paul, there's been 4 decades since he passed away almost. Yeah. So I'm like...
By the way, happy 40th birthday, North Sea Hijack.
Yeah.
This is the 40th anniversary special. Probably the only podcast reviewing this movie. So.
Oh, for the 40th anniversary? It's complete...
Eat it up, listeners. This is the only one you're getting on the interwebs.
I don't think anyone's going to cut. There might be. I wouldn't be surprised if JBR did a review of it.
Well, maybe.
It seems like they're the kind of movie they could cover.
But I do like how the bad guys... I like the plan. It's a good plan. I like how they present themselves as journalists, and they get in really easily because like there's nothing to it. You know, you don't have to do anything extraordinary to present yourself as a journalist. You know, they have a little bit of paperwork to back them up, to back their backstories and all. I do. I like it how one of the Four Eyes, there are 2 Four Eyes characters in this movie. One of them
Coke bottles and
Coke bottles and seasickness.
Seasick.
Yeah, we'll call them seasick and Coke bottles. I can't remember if it's Coke bottles. I think it's seasick. Reads the names of who they're pretending to be. I don't remember what the wrong name he reads is, but Lou Kramer says, I think that says Lou Kramer. Like, I thought that was kind of an interesting little moment where it's almost like, get your story straight. Not as if the story holds for very long, because like the minute they're out of the harbor, they commandeer the ship. But I thought that was an interesting little moment. The how much the Lou Kramer character is maybe a perfectionist and wants everything to run as smoothly as possible. I guess maybe that was a little bit of hint, a suggestion of that personality trait of his.
They're trying to build him as an equal to folks. So they're both like made these plans and they're both trying to improvise and try to outthink each other. Mm. It sounds really cool and like modern, but the way it's presented, it's not them. The movie I'm describing is implied, it's not really on screen.
We've been friends for a few years already, and we often talk movies, we often talk pop culture, whether it's TV, movies predominantly. And you know, I don't think I'm blowing any of the listeners' minds away, and I'm certainly convinced I'm not blowing your mind away, of us two. Which one has the greater tendency to go like, oh, it's not that bad, I still kind of like it. And which one of us is like, no, I didn't really like that. You're a little bit more critical. I'm a little bit more like anything goes sort of. So I think one of the reasons why I like North Sea Hijack / Folks /
It depends. Sometimes, I love my schlock.
Maybe I haven't seen enough schlock. I need more schlock. But then again, I go to Fantasia every freaking year. I see schlock.
Yeah, I see schlock. I don't know. It's sometimes that it's just different tastes.
Yeah, different strokes for different folks.
Ooh.
Keep on coming. So I think the it's a little creaky, it's a little dusty, but I think the acting and the general plot carry me to the finish line.
You know what?
Line.
The acting is probably the highlight of the experience of watching the movie. The directing, not so. The dazzling, like amazing action sequence, not really.
Misleading poster campaign.
Oh my god, that poster is.
It looks like it's a James Bond movie.
And both of them, the red one and the white poster, they both look like amazing action movies with sexy woman and that dangle on Roger Moore's arms, but there's no dangling. There's no sexy woman.
There's certainly no dangling anymore once we find out that boy girl is just girl.
Roger. Yeah. I love the music. I love the electric music. That's one thing I can see. If I see that, if there's an album for this thing, I doubt there is one. I didn't really check. But if there is one, I'll pick it up. I wish there would be a vinyl.
It's jaunty.
Although it's a movie from 1980, it sounds like a 70s movie. Like the soundtrack, it sounds 70s.
That is a little bit of that. Well, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, if a movie comes out in 1950 or 60 or 70 or 80, 90.
I get it.
It's one of the, well, is it?
It's a transition.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a transitional film. Yeah, there's a bit of 70s in there, and there's a little bit of 80s. It's from 1980, so there can't be that much of the 1980s in it. But I can see it going. I can see it teetering either way. Sort of it being viewed as a film from the late 70s or from the early 80s. I can see it sort of going either way. On the topic of the cast, though, lest we overlook the fact that we have a Felix Leiter in this film, David Hedison.
Oh my God, I almost forgot.
Yeah. Who's doing pretty good work in here. Is the movie asking him to do that much? No.
He's better in this than Live and Let Die. He's better featured than this. I think he has more interesting role in this than Felix Leiter.
Okay.
Felix Leiter in Live and Let Die is more like, hey, James, look at this. Oh, bye-bye. And this is, he's integral to the plot because he's the sort of the director of the oil rig.
Or one of the ships. The oil rig or one of the ships? I don't remember.
I thought it was...
You got two options. He's either on the rig or on one of the ships.
such a good movie. Such a great
so memorable.
Film. So memorable.
But no, I do like the fact that David Hedison is here. And it's funny when you think about it for 2 seconds, although it's easy to forget, when you consider it, I mean, Roger and David have worked together quite a bit because they share a screen time in a Saint episode.
Oh, really?
Yep. A Saint episode in which I believe there is a leading lady that almost considers Simon Templar.
Oh.
Howard Saint. What? Where did that even come from? Simon Templar to be James Bond, funnily enough. Yeah. And they would later work in a James Bond movie in Live and Let Die, and then again in North Sea Hijack, / Assault Unit, / Folks, / A Very British Die Hard. / Les Loups de la Mer.
Les Loups de Haute Mer.
Les Loups de Haute Mer, effectivement. C'est de la Haute Mer, effectivement. So, yeah, no, they've worked, albeit several years apart each time. But, yeah, they've certainly worked together. David Hedison must be one of those actors, one of those American actors. And we've heard the stories before. No other names come to mind. The scientist Herschel Beeger in Diamonds Are Forever from Section D. You know, that's an American actor who couldn't find work on stateside and moved to England. And that's where they started getting roles. Because if David Hedison is in The Saint, which is a British show, and then James Bond, which is pseudo-British, pseudo-American, and now he's in this very British film, albeit with some American cast members. I have to think. I should do my homework, to be honest with you, on David Hedison, because it sounds like that's the route.
You know what?
Took.
I wouldn't be against. It would make sense, a fly detour, because the original takes place in Montreal.
It takes place in. I'm not gonna say it's filmed in Montreal.
No,
it's
not. It's not.
But
I would double check that, but no, I don't think so.
But he is the poor sucker that becomes the fly.
And the remake, it was shot in Toronto.
Yeah. Is it in Toronto or is it pretending to be somewhere else? I think it's Toronto.
I think it's Generic City.
Generic City, North America?
North America.
But God bless Toronto. We
I had a good time. I always have a good time in Toronto.
Always have a good time in Toronto.
It's so tranquil compared to Montreal or New York City. Like during the day, it's barely noisy. Montreal during the day, it's always.
Well, maybe it's the traffic that makes that difference. But I like the Faith Brooke is the actress that plays the Prime Minister.
Oh yeah,
who gives again? You know. Prime Minister is not the main character here, so she has barely 2 or 3 scenes. But I think she does a really good job. There's something very Prime Ministerial about the performance.
She's a better Margaret Thatcher than the actress who plays Margaret Thatcher in For Your Eyes Only.
A Roger Moore Bond. Again, we're the kings of 6 degrees of separation here. We did that one in what, 1?
Yeah, that's a wonder.
Beat that, people. So though that's and I like that scene. I've always been a fan of those scenes, which tend to come early in movies, where, like, you know, get the president on the phone, and, you know, the secretary of state is there, and the minister of defense is there, and the minister of this and that, and the police chief, and they start debating about what the best course of action is.
The secretary.
Yeah, I like those scenes, because it lends a bit of...
It creates tension.
Yeah, a bit of... I guess it grounds it a little bit. You know, you get to see, presumably... how these conversations sort of happen behind the scenes when there actually is a big... When the shit hits the fan, well, the Prime Minister needs to talk to his or her cabinet, like, right effing now. So I like it when those scenes come in. And then that's where we meet the James Mason Admiral character for the first time. And he's a little bit doubtful. He expresses reservations about bringing in...
Folks.
I thought you knew the answer to everything, Mr. Folks.
How typical of a woman to make a remark like that at a time like this. Do you have to smoke?
Yes. Yes? It's the Prime Minister's private secretary. They want to know if everything is going as planned.
Tell him to put the Prime Minister on.
Mr. Folks would like to speak to the Prime Minister.
Prime Minister? A change of plans has been forced upon us.
If anything should go wrong, we must blow up the Esther and all on board her.
You're asking me to order the deaths of an innocent crew.
I am telling you how to save the lives of 600 men. And incidentally, the economic life of Great Britain.
I think it would be better to pay the ransom. We have the money collected now.
No, madam, you must not do that. If you do not stand firm on this issue, then you'll simply encourage every villain with a rowing boat to hold this country to ransom again.
If we come to that decision, how do you propose we carry it out?
Are you recording this? I want you to get it straight. The helicopter must arrive at the Esther as scheduled at 0040 hours precisely. That is 40 minutes past midnight. But I want her to be carrying a bomb. Now, if I fire a very light at 0041, everything will be all right. If not, the bomb must be dropped immediately, and I repeat, immediately.
All right, Mr. Folks. It will be done as you request.
Thank you, ma'am. A wise decision, I assure you.
Mr. Folks, how many crew are on the Esther?
The insurance company log states 11. But Admiral Brinson, Mr. King, and I will be on board at the fatal moment.
Good luck to you, Mr. Folks.
Thank you, madam. She seems to have some grasp.
Well, folks, yeah.
Hey, we barely spoke about it's a Roger Moore detour. I feel like we barely spoke about him.
Yeah, like as the actor, as the leading, sort of the leading man of this film. Yeah, well, so what do we think about Roger in this?
He's on the poster. He's the leading man.
If you have scantily clad women clinging to your legs on the poster.
That's on the white poster.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You're still the leading man.
You know what? What can I say about this movie? It feels like Roger Moore's Cowboy and Aliens. It's the movie that he made in between Bond films with a lot of like big name actors that was supposed to be somewhat of a big movie. I mean, the guy just came off from Moonraker, which was one of the biggest movies ever for Bond, and he's in that movie that barely. I don't think he even made $3 million, and since then has been renamed like 3 or 4 times. It is his Cowboy and Aliens.
Never a good sign when they rename a movie. At least Cowboys and Aliens stuck to the name.
Yeah. it was supposed to be a new franchise for Daniel Craig. And
really?
Still waiting for part two.
Jeez Louise. I actually...
I think I like that movie a little bit more than you do, but I remember we talked about doing a Craig detour and I shut it down.
I shut it down and I'm going to continue shutting it down until it's the very last Daniel Craig movie there is to talk about. For the simple reason that...
So that means we're going to talk about Tomb Raider before we talk about...
I will talk about Tomb Raider before... I will talk about Tomb Raider before... Hey. Before what's it called? Yeah.
No problem.
To me... And I can say this with relative confidence because I actually did rewatch it for a live tweet event a couple years ago. I said, oh, yeah, I haven't seen that since the set. I don't remember liking it a whole lot, but I haven't seen it. It's been like 4 or 5 years, and why don't we give it another shot? That... effing movie is like tonally and energy wise that movie is dead on arrival you have trouble with movies that are boring. I have trouble with films that just tonally and energy wise are dead on arrival.
It takes itself,
I can't do it,
so seriously at times. And it's, you know, what it should have done is take the goofiness of a movie like A Thousand Ways to Die in the West and just like... I haven't seen it, but I didn't hear anything good about it, but I saw clips of it. It looks like a goofy movie. Just take a syringe, just plunge it in that movie, get some of it and just inject it. Because that movie just collapses on itself. It's trying to be so self-serious, and the aliens in that movie are Morlocks that eat people and are supposed to be able to drive spaceship. And it's so self... It's a goofy... It should be a fun, goofy movie. And also the movie... It's a two-hour picture, right? It's long. I felt like
six.
My butt was numb when I saw
it. No Time to Die is almost 3 hours. It'll feel shorter.
Probably.
But so there's the, here, there you go. Whilst talking about folks, we've done a Daniel Craig detour. There's your Cowboys and Aliens review. Done. See, happy? We did it.
We did it.
We'll cut that part out and put it as a 2.5-minute long episode. No, more seriously, no, we ain't doing that.
Yeah, no, we're not doing
that. It's but as for North Sea Hijack, so yeah, for me, it's one of those things. Like, look, I'm not gonna pretend that I was watching this movie just invigorated and energized and on the seat of my on the edge of my couch. But at the same time, I think I'm such a, and I'm not saying you're not, but I'm such an actors and actresses kind of guy that when there's a cast that I like and they're putting in really good work and the plot is just serviceable enough, that can carry me through.
But I've agreed with you that the cast is superb.
Well, I'm just elaborating why I kind of like it a bit more.
I think that's you got a lot more out of just the cast. It has to be a whole for me.
And Roger Moore, he's not half bad at playing a huge douche.
He's not bad, but the thing that's weird about this movie is that Anthony Perkins and Roger Moore are not in the same movie. And when they merge together, it's one of them stays in his movie, and the other is enters the movie. Because I feel Roger Moore is more goofy the entire time, but not goofy in like whoa slapstick kind of way. But he's more like, of course I hate women. And Anthony Perkins is drink that coffee. And Roger Moore and Perkins come to clash. Roger Moore is a lot more tense and serious. The first time they meet, he's very stoic and he's not as playful.
Well, he can't be because he's the in the role playing. They're doing, he's the underling of James Mason, so he can't afford to, because that would be even weirder.
Even then, later on, I don't know. I'd be interested to see what the film schedule was for that movie. Which actor was on set? How long they shot with Roger? How long they shot with Perkins? I'd be interested. Maybe not that interested, because I don't want to watch that movie again, and it's the second time we're talking about it.
True that.
It's me that said that, because I'm like I watched that movie like almost twice. I wanted to re-record. Let's
plow through.
Yeah, these guys. I'm like, I suffered.
Well, it's not a movie where there's a plethora of things to talk about. Obviously, you know, by 21st century standards, it's a horrible movie because of all the misogyny. Yeah, there's a shit ton of misogyny.
Even then,
it's played for laughs. It's played although for you can't you can't pretend it's also you also can't pretend it's not misogyny.
You know what?
Some of it is funny.
Why on earth?
Since they cannot see her, make them think that some bungling naval bomb disposal officer has done so.
What will that achieve?
Would have thought that was obvious. If they think Ruth has gone, they're hardly likely to try and blow her up themselves.
He may press the button anyway.
Well, that is a chance we have to take. I suggest a nice big explosion shortly after dark, followed by a fire to light up the sky for miles around.
I'll lay it on immediately.
Now, what's the second reason?
Since the helicopter brought three people here, there's no reason why it shouldn't take three people back, providing we can get them aboard unseen.
Ah, yes. But which three?
Well, there are eight women aboard.
Nonsense. If women want equality in life, they must also accept it in death. Don't you agree?
Of course.
Then take the three youngest, regardless of sex. The old have had their chances.
I tried to watch the what's it called? It's a Mel Brooks movie, Le Sheriff est en prison, Blazing Saddles.
Oh, right. And there's a movie that with a couple of scenes where you sort of go like, "This is funny, but ooh."
It's still funny, but is that the thing? Is that you have to have a sense of humor? It's weird. It's weird to say that faut vraiment que tu sois un cave. Okay, that movie, that Blazing Saddles, is a brilliant comedy. It has great slapstick, but also it's also making fun of racism.
Thick-headed.
You have to be
thin-skinned and thick-headed.
Yeah, not even thin-skinned. You have to be an imbecile not to get the jokes that
Unfortunately, I know what you're saying, and we're on the same page, and you know we're on the same page.
I know.
But we live, and we've had off-mic conversations about this sometimes. It's not our favorite topic. In fact, it's an annoying topic.
Yeah.
But since we're on it, you know, we do live in an era where, for reasons that we don't need to get into fully here, because we're trying to review a movie about misogyny, we live in an era. There we go. Good night, folks. We live in an era where you're just not, whether you and I agree or not, you're just not, quote, supposed to make those. You're just
not
supposed
to. You have to be sensible to everyone. You can't make, you know, by making fun of something or being like, it was super misogynistic, like that movie is, it destroys misogyny.
The movie is not pretending that folks isn't an asshole.
No, it says he wears it on his sleeve. So I'm like, I'm an asshole. I hate women. He's
Blazing Saddles isn't pretending that racism and homophobia aren't bad things. But unfortunately, And the anti-homophobia, anti-racism scenes in place are actually some of the funnier scenes.
They are.
But we live in an era where, unfortunately, we're so surface. It's funny. Man, we're really getting off topic now, but we're done with folks. you know, it's one of those things where, although it does relate to folks, because there are some, you know, quote, bad jokes in folks, and there's a number of them in folks. So we're still sort of on topic.
It's going to be a weird episode to edit.
Yeah, it's just we live in an era where, despite that we have access to so much information at our fingertips, and this is something I've said to a number of people, we have so much easy access on our fingertips, we have sort of trained ourselves to do the opposite of what you would think happens if you have access to so much information, which is to be closed off to the possibilities and to become or to read things on such a surface level, to the extent where if you showed folks / North Sea Hijack / A Very British Diehard to somebody today or Blazing Saddles, they wouldn't get the joke.
No, they'd be offended.
It would be Blazing Saddles and folks are horrible, horrible movies, and you've had your say, shut up, boomer. You know, that's how that conversation would go. But the movie knows folks is an asshole.
There's a
that's the joke. He's an asshole.
You've seen the original Dead Race 2000?
No, I haven't.
Oh. Well,
I haven't seen the remake or the original.
I'm going to spoil a joke in the movie. And I heard somebody told me that joke was not meant to be a joke. And I'm like, you have to be an imbecile. It was a joke in 1970 something.
That's a Stallone movie.
Yeah, it's a Stallone movie. He's a tertiary character. It's more like a David Carradine movie. He's the lead.
I need to do my Carradine homework. Actually.
At one point, the David Carradine is explained that he's basically a cyborg, and it turns out that one of his hands has been replaced. And the end of the movie, he sort of removes it and chugs it, and it explodes because it's a hand grenade. And somebody told me that, oh, it was serious in the 70s. No, it was a joke. It's always been a joke. It's a hand grenade. There's
ha, like, ha. And I thought my jokes were bad.
And there's this girl where I used to work. At one point, she was she was talking to one of her coworkers who was pregnant, and she asked him a question. It made everyone a gasp, except two persons, me and the person she asked the question.
Of course,
the person. Because she was pregnant. She asked him, "But what are you going to do if your baby's butt ugly?" And so everyone there,
because of course that question was asked with utter seriousness.
No, the way she asked it, she looked genuinely concerned, but comme on dit en français, pain sans rire, you're sort of tongue-in-cheek.
Poker face. She's a good actress.
Poker face. But and everyone laughed, but some people were really offended by that joke. I'm like, come on, seriously, guys. Like, grow a sense of humor.
I don't know what's going on. I mean, we're getting increasingly off topic, but I suffice to say, you know, I don't know what's going on.
I don't give a folks about this movie.
Oh. Oh, about the movie too. Oh, I know you don't.
Yeah, you don't. I just found like, oh, and also I think I said it earlier, but oh my God, the pubic hair they glued to Roger Moore's face is disgusting. I've seen him. There's that famous picture of him visiting Brosnan on the set of GoldenEye, and he's got a little beard. It doesn't look like three branches or a tumor that's stuck on his face.
I don't know. Maybe he doesn't grow the beard very quickly, but the character needed a beard. But in his contract, he'll go, I got to be back at Pinewood in a few months, like for your eyes only. Like, can you just stitch something on?
Yeah, it's not the same. It's
some
not
people, I don't grow a beard at all, for starters. So I'm an example need to shave my pubic hair and put it on my face.
You got a luxurious mustache in November.
Thank you. But that's as good as it gets.
So Tom Selleck would
slow clap. I have no problem with Tom Selleck. I've always liked a little bit of Tom Selleck, so that's fine by me. Burt good. Reynolds as well, and you know, it's the whole gang. Oh. You know, I'm fine. I'm fine with those
you
guys.
You know what? Next Halloween, Hawaiian shirt. What's his name? Magnum PI cosplay.
Absolutely. Or he's driving beer. Counterfeit beer.
Oh, Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah, Smokey and the Bandit. I'll be the Bandit. That's not a bad idea, actually. So yeah, I mean, look, even though I like the film more than you and enjoyed it enough, I think we've sort of expended as much energy and time as a film as this perhaps merits.
Oh, you know what time is it?
Okay, I've told you enough times, Matthew. Stop looking at your phone while we're recording.
But. I still got a message.
That's why I'm asking you to stop doing it.
Yeah, but sticking to that jerk.
The only reason why I let you want to, do you want to know the one reason and the only reason why I let you do it? In the off chance that for once he asks a different question.
Well, you're going to be disappointed. Because it's always.
It's still that one, huh?
It's still the same question.
Hit me.
Do you have.
Do I have pubic hair on my face?
People everywhere.
We do have people everywhere. Wouldn't you agree, Mr. Folks? As long as there are no women. I find cats to be a superior breed. Oh, there's some really dirty ones in this one. So yes, we do have people everywhere.
I love the one when he's on the train and the woman's smoking and he's like, I asked for a non-smoking train, and he kicks her out and he's
oh,
like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Or the part where, it's getting to be crunch time, and it looks like the Lou Kramer character means business about blowing shit up. And so they think, oh, maybe we should start, we should maybe get rid of some people that are on the platform. Like, we don't need everybody to die here. And David Hedison's assistant, who's played by a woman, says, I suppose you want the women to leave. And folks, ooh, like... You know, no, quite the contrary, in fact. Since women are so insistent on being in equal footing with men in life, they should be, I'm sure they agree, they should be on equal footing in death. Wouldn't you agree? And she says, yes, of course. Like, you want to be on this oil rig? Then die with us. It's like, wow, just stop it. Stop opening your mouth. Just dig in your own grave.
Each time, he's amazing.
Ugh. So we do have people everywhere. www.thejamesbondcomplex.com, which serves as the Tumblr account, in case you didn't know. And if you're looking for our Tumblr account, it's the website.
Secret.
It's a secret. The secret's out. We have a Facebook page, search for the James Bond Complex. We have an Instagram account, which is also at the James Bond Complex. The Twitter account, a little different, at the Bond Complex. As Joe Darlington likes it. I don't think Joe's ever called us the James Bond Complex.
No, he hasn't.
I think he's always called us the Bond Complex. We're on Anchor, our HQ. We're hosted on anchor.fm. YouTube, search for the James Bond Complex. Subscribe and tickle us with the thumbs up button. And we got Spotify. We have the Google Play Store and Apple Podcasts. Search for the James Bond Complex. Subscribe, write a review, and if you still have a few seconds, if you have 5 seconds left, count down 5, 1 star, 2 star, 3 star, 4 star, 5 star. Color them in gold because we love gold. 5 star glowing golden gun review. We are technically still active online, although I feel like we're managing the shows. Platform so much that I really don't do that much on Twitter anymore, but I'm still there sometimes. 00pop, double underscore OH underscore POP.
I'm on Twitter at Matt Auclair. Barely. I don't know the last time I tweeted something.
Poubelle, ça.
Hein?
Poubelle.
Yeah, I'll keep it. It's still on my phone. I still get some of the tweets from both, but it's 99%. Sometimes I'm like, is that for me? Is that Instagram? And sometimes it's Twitter. Like, I get answers from Twitter from questions I didn't ask. So I'm like, eh. I'm mostly on Instagram at MattAuclair007 because I'm super creative like that.
As everybody keeps telling you.
Yes.
And folks, I think we're gonna leave folks in the antiquated past.
We're hijacking out of here.
Oh yeah! Ooh, very good. We've been pretty good for a review we've done for a second time in the same day. I kind of like what we're gonna finally deliver. It might even be better than the first version of the show. Let's try not to delete this one.
Yeah.
So just as James Bond, however, returns, and Roger will, that's soon enough. So too does the James Bond complex. Merci, toujours un plaisir, et à la prochaine.
Au revoir! Minutes. Tabarnak.